You're listening to a Mint podcast brought to you by HD Smartcast.
Hi, I'm Shovik Das. I'm Leslie DeMonte.
And I'm Deepti Ahuja. You're listening to Mint Etc.,
a podcast where we will talk about important developments in technology and how they will transform our lives, work, and play as we know it.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Mint Tech Cetera podcast. We are back with our third episode. On the first two episodes, we did speak a lot about the Consumer Electronics Show. Last episode, we found out that Deepti, who's our co-host, doesn't mind spending $200 for the robot AI assistant. In fact, she's very sure that she's going to spend that money, which makes us think that she likes to spend on things that
matter to her.
Well, let's just keep it at that. But we have spent a week in between. And, you know, before we go ahead with all the newsy stuff and all, Leslie, what's been happening? What have you seen anything interesting that's caught your eye in the past 1 week?
Oh, absolutely. You know, in fact, actually, I'm going to go a little contra because I remember last week we spoke about, you know, how AI enabled smartphones and generative AI enabled smartphones, gaining ground. I shared some numbers also during the episode. And in fact, after that, you wrote a primer whether AI can save smartphones. Of course, the point is whether I don't think there's any option. So you have AI already there in a smartphone. So whether it can save or not is really a inconsequential question. But the point is like whether they can charge for AI features. I personally don't feel that they will ever be able to do that because it's going to be very hard for anybody to do that. But that's a different subject altogether.
Right.
I want to point out to a research that I, somebody shared with me. So it says that a group of researchers from the University of Milano, Bicocca, and Suspi. So this is the Italian, basically.
Right.
So they did a longitudinal study. In fact, there were two studies. Basically, they say that early smartphone usage before the age of 12 does not bring benefits. Okay. Now, So they did a longitudinal study. So longitudinal studies typically are those kind of studies done over a period of time. They're pretty detailed kind of studies. The only caveat out here being that these were done on Italian children. But I think, the sample size was in thousands and very well researched one. So the first study, which is titled The Age of the Smartphone and Analysis of Social Predictors of Children's Age of Access, and it's a long kind of title,
right.
But basically it just says, that while it shows that females and students from less educated families are more likely to receive smartphones earlier. And it also, among other things, the second study, shows that when they studied two cohorts. So the research encompassed kind of an age range of 10 to 14 years, comparing those who acquired the device at 10 and 11 years old during the transition from primary to lower secondary school to those who received it in later years, specifically at 12, 13, and 14 years of age.
Right.
And the total sample size was about 1,672, but these were all Italian students. Now, the results, this is something that we should carefully listen. The results do not indicate, and I'm quoting from the study, do not indicate any benefits at the end of the lower secondary school for those who obtain smartphones early, even for the most academically motivated students. However, participants who built intensive media usage habits before owning a smartphone, that is in more than 2 hours per day of TV and video games, etc., they experienced a significant negative impact on their Italian language learning.
Ooh.
So this is, pretty interesting. So actually, basically, the researchers are, sort of saying that these results not only confirm the existence of negative relationships between early smartphone usage and life outcomes in the long run, but also show that behind such correlations lies a direct negative impact, which becomes visible for those with a reduced ability to limit screen time due to family context or specific psychological characteristics. Now, this is pretty interesting from a study point of view. I mean, these are pretty detailed kind of studies. And essentially, just to summarize for the benefit of our listeners, is that early smartphone usage is not really that conducive for children. So if you remember in the past episodes also, Shavik and Dipti, you'll both remember that we were talking, you know, I mean, I come from a kind of generation where we used to play in the in school. I'm not saying that that was, perfect. I mean, every generation always says that, you know, my time was the best time. No, I'm not going to make that stupid argument. But I'm just saying, yeah, these kind of studies actually show that while smartphones, regardless of whether you're getting into, now that we're getting into AI and Gen AI kind of smartphones, my point is like, it should not make us dumb.
Right.
Limited. That is one study that I found very interesting. And of course, the second part, which I think we all would probably by now, the whole world has gone gaga over it, is I would say excited and apprehensive about the development. That is of Elon Musk's Neuralink,
yeah,
where they had the first brain implant in a human being. They had the permission to do the US FDA trials in September, I think. So now they have implanted the first human chip. So that's something, two interesting kind of developments that caught my eye.
Right. You know, it's interesting because I feel like there's a certain correlation between these two, because even there have been previous researchers which have pointed to that prolonged usage of smartphones, even in older age groups, leads to increasing distraction, multiple generations being unable to focus on certain things. Be it at work productivity. In fact, certain researchers have said that productivity, in fact, declines with the extended use of social media on smartphones. And that has, of course, been a concern. But, you know, what Neuralink promises is that with these chip implants, if you can control certain impulses on your brain, of course, the use cases are very different. But there's, of course, a strong link to being able to control how, you know, brain functions operate. And a lot of things like distraction, getting distracted due to a certain thing over time, could be something that builds as a behavior over time, which a lot of these intricacies, I feel, is going to change as brain research and, you know, brain-computer interfaces develop over time, which is I think a super, super interesting field. Deepthi, have you been following this as well?
Yeah, I just read, I mean, early in the morning about Neuralink and how the first human trial has happened, right? And they're recovering well. My only thing is that, you know, our thoughts are like really private, and something like a Neuralink, then of course consent is required, but you know, things can be done without that also, or consent can be taken in a manipulative way as well. So that was my concern, right, with regards to Neuralink. But of course there are benefits to it as well, like you mentioned a couple. Having said that, Leslie, just to go back to the study, when we were kids, right, or when we were growing up and we were studying, we were doing our graduation, there used to be studies about television and how television was bad.
Yes.
For our generation.
Absolutely. No, that's why it's always important to, you know, understand where these studies come from. There's always the concern, like as you said, if I find a correlation between Neuralink and this, is not so much on the, so concerns, definitely concerns will always be there, and they should be, because they sort of balance, they strike a balance between being super excited about a new development without, you know, understanding how to put guardrails around it, but first I think it's very important to understand that, you know, this brain computer interfaces, or BCI as they are known, are not, that's not a new development. That's been around for almost like 3-4 decades. The work has been going on BCIs, the brain computer interface. There are two types of BCIs. One is an invasive BCI, the other one is a non-invasive one. Neuralink is the invasive one. So the implant, the chip is actually
bigger.
Yeah, the other ones are like on the top, like electrodes and all that. So yeah, all that stuff is being done. Mostly they have been done in rats and monkeys, and they have found kind of stuff. But I think the more important part of it is that it could give vision to the blind. It could, you know, help with Alzheimer's or Parkinson's or whichever diseases kind of stuff. As Elon Musk, for once, I agree with him that if Stephen Hawking had been alive, probably, you know, that would have been an amazing case imagined. So this is what Elon Musk said, and yeah, people like Stephen Hawking and all would benefit immediately from these kind of interfaces. And I know of many people who would actually benefit from this. So clearly, I mean, the concerns are there. But I think you brought up a good point, which I think even Souvik should weigh in on, as far as the you know, how he looks at it. Because yeah, we were concerned about whether TV is going to, you know, invade us and find out, and we. Yeah, we have lived with it.
And then we moved on from the television addiction to another kind of an idiot box addiction, which is our smartphone. It just becomes smaller.
Yeah, yeah. Somewhere in the middle, you know, there was the desktop PC generation where, you know, we sit and play video games and Age of Empires and, you know, Contra and Quake and all the first generation Unreal Tournament, all these video games which came along. I remember as a kid, there was... I grew up in Calcutta, so there was a newspaper called The Telegraph, which is still there. And there was this big front page report on The Telegraph. This is sometime in the 2000s, which said that increasing exposure to violent video games is leading to kids becoming violent in their reaction to parents at homes. You know, Call of Duty is leading to people snapping at their parents more. So this was going to be a, you know, big thing which was kind of ruining our generation. It was supposed to ruin our generation. And then we moved on from that to, you know, some people stating that, you know, the hand-eye coordination when people play video games and the way their brain reacts
improves,
artificial, and it improves their ability to, you know, understand things and, you know, synthesize information in college and things. And apparently it made us smarter. So it's very, very, very interesting.
Yeah, I mean, there are two sides to the argument always, you know, because like you could, like some people say, okay, when you see kind of Hollywood and Bollywood movies, the kind of, especially, you know, the violent ones, that you also, you know, have a tendency for to being violent. So that's an age old argument kind of stuff.
Right.
What comes before the cart or the horse? You know, you want to put the cart before the horse, or you want to put the horse before the cart. But yes, I think there's a guy, an American journalist, an author, Nicholas Carl, who wrote a book way back, I think it's almost more than a decade back, called The Shallows, which, you know, talks about how the internet rewires your brain, or how it has been rewiring your brain. And these were the kind of things that, so it definitely, any new technology tends to, you know, rewire your brain, because you develop new habits. So that's any psychologist or psychiatrist might tell you that. And that's extremely true. For instance, in London, the black cab drivers were very famous. They knew every, you know, nook and corner on the streets. But when you started getting GPS, imagine now everybody knows about it.
Right.
It's altogether another story, that GPS itself takes you to dead ends. And
so I think, see, the thing is that, you know, when one, it's almost like if one sense goes, or if you forget to do one thing a certain way, then you develop a sense for another thing, right? And another thing becomes important and you remember that, no?
I don't know. I think a psychiatrist or the psychologist might be able to weigh in better, because I've not focused on those kind of, that's not my area of expertise. But like from the reading part of it, from the research papers that are out, I can definitely say one thing that, let's say, now, for instance, like maths, most of us know our tables, okay? Like I can recite tables right up to like 15, 16, 17, 18, because I studied them in school.
Right.
Okay. Now, most kids of today would use a calci and say, why do I need to know it? Why should I clutter my brain with that?
Yeah.
See, they have definitely a point. Today, you have a scientific calculator and you would say, okay, fine, why should I know how to, you know, the formulae, for instance. We had to study all the formulas, right? But now today you get everything in a scientific calculator. You can actually do it in a jiffy. So you may truly ask yourself, or for that matter of fact, look at programming. Now AI is doing all your programming, right? You may ask, okay, now why do I? So those kind of conversations can go on ad nauseum. My point is tomorrow. Okay, now I'm going to take you into a different realm, both of you. So just pay attention to what I'm saying.
Sure.
We have seen in sci-fi movies, okay, because our listeners are all the Gen Z. So you've seen so many sci-fi movies. You have the Gen Z, Gen X, all kind of generations listening to our podcast. Yeah. And tomorrow you have a geostorm, which disables your entire communication systems. Okay. Mm-hmm. And geostorms are not something that is a figment of our imagination. Tomorrow you could have an asteroid destroying New York City. You could have an asteroid destroying many parts of this world with all our communication systems. You could have satellites burn out because of solar flares.
Okay.
So all these things are possible, right?
Yes.
What happens, like, I would still know my maths. I would still know my basic stuff. I will still be able to get. So a person who is born and brought up in the jungles and Andamans or something would still know how to navigate. If any of us get stuck with our GPS, like, we do not, like, many of us don't know how to read the maps, right? Physical maps.
Mm.
There's no internet connection. You don't have towers when you go out to the jungle. So if you're the hiker, you get lost and you actually have only a physical map, or you don't have an idea of how north and south works, how to look at north and south, how to look at the pole star, how to look at the north star. You know, you'll be dead. You'll be at the bottom of the food chain anyway. So I'm just saying that personally, I would not want to lose all the skills. I would have like to strike a balance, which is what we're trying to do with artificial intelligence also and with Gen AI. Time and again, people say, okay, let us strike a balance. Let us have humans in the loop. I think that emphasis, I personally would keep on repeating that it's important not to lose all your skill sets and not to keep on outsourcing everything, every function of yours, else you'd be dead.
I agree. It's not just about, let's not, even if we don't talk about sci-fi movies, right? Even if we talk about what's happening today, it's very important to understand things and grasp things by their basics. Only then do we have that sense of ownership. If we don't understand things from, their building blocks, then that sense of ownership is no longer there, and you're just a peg in a machine, right? So it's as simple as that. And we've understood that because we used to have, I remember, chapters of Industrial Revolution, all of these things in our textbooks, right? That used to help us understand why things changed, what happened. And it used to force us to understand these things, because the only way in which we could research those things was to go to the library and look at different books, and then, stumble upon the information that we really truly require. But today, I just have to type in the right keywords, and I just, eliminate everything else that I would have learned otherwise. And so therefore, my building blocks are not there. And if I don't have building blocks, then how do I have a sense of ownership of any subject that I'm pursuing? So that, even if you don't talk about sci-fi, holds true still.
That's something that I was recently having this conversation with a bunch of 22-year-olds. The Gen Z has a very different way of perceiving information. And a question came up is that, why do you need a degree today? Because this one person started saying that, I read a lot. I read on my smartphones a lot. And it wasn't one of those random unsubstantiated claims by kids that, oh, I'm a voracious reader. But he actually meant that, I really read a lot. I've taught myself how to code. I see X hours of YouTube videos on coding every day. I read all the newspapers every morning. And I follow a bunch of tech personalities on LinkedIn and this and that and so on and so forth. His point was that I am very bad at taking examinations. So I could never get through to the IITs, and my engineering, rank was not good enough for one of the top tier colleges. But when I go and meet my friends today, a couple of his friends are in the IITs, and he's like, I know more about creating an application or trying to take a business idea, a tech-driven business idea to the market, because he's sort of like this person who wants to learn on his own. And instead of doing engineering, he ended up doing BSc psychology. And he's teaching himself how to code and stuff. And he was like, I don't need a degree to define me. But his biggest point was that, you know, the moment I go to circles and I try to tell people that, okay, I'm studying psychology, but I know a lot about coding, nobody takes me seriously. You know,
right.
Think that, you must be one of those people, Joe. You know, you must have seen how to code on Coursera or some YouTube videos. And, you know, good for you. Keep it up. It's a good side project. But nobody takes me seriously. So this thing that you spoke about, you know, taking ownership and agency, and as well as the good and the bad sides of technology, I'll just bring both of your attention to the Economic Review, which came out yesterday from the Finance Ministry. Since this is an interim budget, we didn't get a full economic survey this year. But in the report, clause 1.29, the government notes that one of the challenges confronting the Indian economy is AI. And it's interesting because so far, everything that the government has been talking about is that AI is going to sort of contribute 30% to our $5 trillion economy goal and so on and so forth. What they've said here in the Economy Review is that the advent of AI poses a big challenge to governments around the world due to the question that it poses on employment, particularly in services, which is a massive part of employment in India. This was highlighted in the International Monetary Fund as well, which estimated that 40% of global employment is exposed to AI, and India is not immune to the effects of AI that it will have on employment and the overall services industry. Which is very interesting because, you know, every time we keep speaking about, you know, the perks of AI and the positives of AI and how AI is going to help us become more efficient and so on, even in the IT services industry, and all the big CEOs keep speaking about that we are upskilling our employees so that they become more efficient as employees. But this is probably one of the first times and one of the few times that, you know, a government that's been bullish on technology has also spoken about, you know, the challenge that AI poses and how that can impact, lead to a significant loss of jobs, in fact, for that matter. What do you guys feel about it? Leslie, you've, in fact, observed the IT services industry for decades now. Do you feel AI could kind of lead to a change, a fundamental change in the way hiring happens in the sector and jobs?
Yes. See, there are two ways of looking at it. One, of course, that the IT sector is not new to AI because you already had automation. Okay.
Right.
So almost like a decade back also, I remember I used to have these discussions that I mentioned the Chandrasekaran was the TCS CEO for thing. And then before that, Ramadurai, and of course, with Infosys also, and with all the other IT services firms, we should have these conversations. And I should ask them about linear versus non-linear growth and how long, you know, would this linear growth or the human headcount work for them. I remember many of them at that point in time used to dismiss it, but at heart of heart, they knew that it was coming because automation was already getting into these kind of jobs, and a lot of sort of offshoring was happening, and on-site kind of, all these IT services companies were building on-site because of the geopolitics part of it, where they were, you had to set up centers where the work was. So they had to do both of them. I think now what is happening is you have automation, then you have intelligent automation, so the RPA, then intelligent RPA, and then you have AI part of it. How much of it is being automated? How much of it is being it cuts both ways. One, of course, it increases the revenue for these IT services companies because they have no other option but to do these projects, but it requires a different skill set. So I am not sure how many of these employees can actually be reskilled. That is something that I think somebody has to do a deep study and then figure out how many people are actually getting out of the workforce because they cannot be upskilled.
Right.
So that would be something. So For our listeners, I think the kind of skill sets that we come up with, like today, of course, one of the hot skills is prompt engineering, and restricted if we're just to the IT sector, the tech sector. But are there other skills? Yeah, of course, you can become a UX guy, you can become a CX, a customer experience, a user experience person. You can do so many other skill sets are there. But will they also be automated at some point in time? Yes, everything will be automated. AI will seep into everything. Gen AI will make most of these things. But does that mean that this is a doomsday thing? No, not really. I think there will be a lot of calls for humans in the loop. Okay. Part of it will also be government interventions because they cannot lose jobs. Because you'll have chaos. Because remember, there are ancillary industries. It'll have a cascading effect. It is not just IT sector guys losing their jobs. They have employed maids at home. They have taken EMIs. They have bought real estate. So that, you know, all the ancillary industries also suffer because of that. And it has an impact on the economy. But remember one thing. I think whenever we're talking about the impact of jobs, especially in a country like India, which is a developing country, we need to be very aware that still about 90% of our workforce is in the unorganized sector.
Right.
Yeah.
Absolutely. You know, we fail to understand that. We fail to appreciate that fact. It's extremely important for us to understand that most of our conversations of job losses, etc., pertain more to the organized sector. Even if you look at the World Economic Forum report on job losses, they talk about jobs that are not going to be touched at this point in time, at least, are those of plumbers, or those are electricians, those are contractors. Right. Yeah, because for that, you'll have to have these kind of AI and generative AI kind of programs embedded in robots. And that is not going to be easy, because the price of, you know, the cost of buying a robot will be far more expensive than the human labor as of now.
Right.
What happens 5 years from now? What happens 15 years from now? What happened 25 from now? I think nobody really knows, because there are too many factors.
Absolutely.
So as of now, yes, it's a major concern. Upskilling is the order of the day. Each one has to find out like what the youngsters are doing. And all of us, it's not about youngsters. It is not about any particular generation. All of us have to keep on upskilling. And even at my level, I still have to keep on upskilling. I will become redundant.
Right.
So I have to take a Coursera course. I have to take a Udemy course. I have to take Stanford courses. I have to take. Except that to answer to your point, I think these certifications now are getting recognized by employers. Employers are taking these online certificates seriously, saying that yes, this person is quite of, you know, has taken accountability and is responsible and has taken ownership of, you know, his own upskilling. So that is an important point.
Right, absolutely. Deepthi, have you felt at any point that your job's gonna be taken by an AI substitute as well at some point?
So I generally tend to also, I'm the kind of employee who can fit in a lot of different kinds of places. And I've also had a taste of different kinds of mediums in communications. So even if, you know, AI takes over my job, I know that I will upskill myself and do something else and find something else to do. And that would actually be very exciting for me. To be able to upskill and to be able to see those patterns and to be able to do something new. So I don't see it as a threat. Having said that, I think one should listen to this week's episode on AI Rising with Umakant Soni. He says that India has to get to a point to, you know, upskill themselves for AI and actually create AI ecosystems, because India has data and India is desperate. Right, these are the two things that are working in its favor. So I would rather, you know, not talk about it and have introduce you to the episode that I produced on AI Rising. Please go and, you know, listen to it. Yeah. I think that will give a better idea of where we stand as an economy and where can we go from here.
That's
and Souvik, if you remember Alvin Toffler's quote, which I often cite, is that the illiterate of the 21st century will not be those who cannot read and write, but those who cannot learn, unlearn, and relearn.
Relearn, right? Yes.
You know, just let this sink in, and then you realize the importance of this quote.
No, absolutely. That is very true. And I think that's the sort of multiple debates that we keep having in various forms and various syntaxes and various forums. But we are going to...
But before you conclude, just again, once again for the listeners, I want to, you know, stress on this word, unlearn.
Yes.
Relearn. You know, because it's learning is fine. Every time we're talking about upskilling and learning, but we seldom forget that we have to unlearn a lot. And this does not pertain only to a generation gap or you know, just that right. Old people have to unlearn what they definitely have to unlearn what they're, but even youngster, anybody taking a course, it becomes redundant by the time you have learned it. So you have to, you know, constantly unlearn, relearn, and, you know, keep on learning. That learning cycle is continuous. So that is something that is extremely important.
Absolutely. It is. And I think that's the main part that unlearn. In fact, a lot of people have said is that unlearning what you already know for years through your degrees and stuff is probably the most difficult part. And
The humility to say that I'm wrong.
Yes, that's very true. And on that note, Deepthi has made a very self-efficient promotion of our own podcast, which is also hosted by Leslie as well as Giant AI Rising. If you're listening and if you've heard our episode till now, definitely do go listen to the latest episode of AI Rising. And on that note, we will take your leave for the third week on the Mint TechCetera podcast. Thank you so much for listening to us. See you next week.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
So folks, that's it for this episode. You are listening to Mint TechCetera.
You can reach out to us on LinkedIn if you have any questions. Our handles are in the description.
This episode was produced by me, Deepthi Ahuja. It was edited by Amrinder Singh. Catch you next week.
To stay updated on this podcast, follow us at HD Smartcast on all the major social media platforms. To listen to more such podcasts, log on to www.hdsmartcast.com.